Why did Master White have to fidget with the way things worked and ruin a perfectly good system? If things went slantways under his watch, Pharos knew that he'd be the one catching hell or a knife in the back. It didn't matter that he hadn't asked for the help and certainly hadn't volunteered to babysit the deaf mute. If Master White didn't have his bag of rocks come daybreak with every last pebble accounted for, well, it wouldn't be pretty. What is up, you guys? Welcome back to another episode where we last left off. And this is a huge spoiler if you're not caught up yet. If you aren't, you can follow the link in the description to a playlist with every single episode up until this point. But as Lee, Amatha, and Elias watch, Haytham is executed on the sanctuary steps. If you need a refresher about where we are in the story, I will also have a link down in the description for a couple of recap videos just to give you a sense of the story so far. All right, that is enough out of me. I will catch you at the end of the episode. I'm Josh Call, and this is Last Coliseum. The wagoner popped another nut into his mouth, lips smacking as he sucked the salt off it. He let his gaze trail across the long line of carts bound west for the Hinter, idly wondering how many hours of his life he'd wasted waiting to pass through the gates of the Edge. Pharos had come a long way to be sitting in the same place. Once a goat herd, always a goat herd. He turned and spat the saltless almond into the river with the velocity of a slingstone. He watched with some satisfaction as it plunked into the froth a full 15 paces from the riverbank before being whisked under the stone bridge. He hunted for a stray beam of sunlight through a gap in the clouds, scowling at the viscous trickle of bodies through the gate up ahead. He should have been out by now. Last haul, he'd emptied the wagon and been well on his way to a good roaring drunk in one of the villages long before the farmhands came in from the fields. At this rate, he'd be lucky to reach Bluebeard before dark.
"Can you bloody believe this?" he muttered under his breath.
He wasn't sure when he'd begun talking to himself, but working alone running meat out of the city, for a long time Pharos had had to content himself with his own company. The goats seldom had anything interesting to say. Mostly he was talking to himself, but not entirely. The Qadari deaf-mute sitting passenger beside him didn't say anything. Pharos didn't expect him to. So far he hadn't said a word since he joined up at the stable 2 hours ago.
"Are you the new lad?"
he'd asked after getting over his initial shock and spluttering a few expletives when the young man appeared in one of the stalls behind him. The Qadari had pale, almost colorless eyes and an expressionless face. He nodded.
"Check the back,"
muttered Pharos, jerking his head to the covered wagon as he fit the bridle over the dray's nose.
"Make sure it's locked up tight, tighter than your sister's,"
he faltered. Something about those no-color eyes unsettled him. That and the knives he had strapped to the belts crisscrossing his chest.
"And keep your hands out of the bars,"
Pharos called after him as he disappeared around the back.
"They bite."
He ran his thumb absently over the white stumps of his middle and forefinger. You only had to learn that lesson once. At least his mysterious benefactor had paid him well for the inconvenience at a pretty rate of 2 crowns per finger. And better still, he hadn't begrudged Pharos jabbing his knife through the neck of the sorry little shit who'd maimed him.
"That'll learn him."
The wagon lurched forward a few steps, then stopped again, spilling his little paper packet of nuts on the cobbles. Pharos cursed and tried to salvage what he could.
"Let's get a move on,"
he barked at the gray cloaks holding the column hostage. He gnawed on the corner of his lip, his patience bleeding out by the minute. Bluebeard wouldn't wait past dark, and if the nation left, he'd be hard-pressed to explain to Master White why he still had a wagon full of meat and none of the ugly mud-colored gemstones the outlaws traded as payment. He could only hope that the other wagon had already made it down, and that whoever was driving could talk Bluebeard into waiting for the rest of the shipment. Not likely. The Free Nation were a twitchy lot. It had taken Pharos years to build trust with Bluebeard and his trading party, and they still threatened to gut him as often as not.
Why did Master White have to fidget with the way things worked and ruin a perfectly good system? One wagon load every other moon was plenty. If he wanted to hire other goat herds to run meat to other smugglers in between, Cirrus keep them. If they got caught or shot for their trouble, that was no business of his. Not this time. If things went slantways under his watch, Pharos knew that he'd be the one catching hell, or a knife in the back. It didn't matter that he hadn't asked for the help, and certainly hadn't volunteered to babysit the deaf-mute. If Master White didn't have his bag of rocks come daybreak with every last pebble accounted for, well, it wouldn't be pretty. Not for the first time, he wondered whether he shouldn't pack a bag, hire himself onto an eastbound caravan, and chase his fortune somewhere out past the jaw. He'd been telling himself for years that he was only doing this until he could save up enough gold to set him up with a couple of wives as a Southreach rancher, raising cows and pigs and even a few billies for nostalgia's sake. He sighed. Once a goat herd. Of course, Southreach was a long way off. Longer still if his wages kept going the same way that the 4 crowns for his fingers had. He'd emerge from that particular haze after 3 days, penniless and hungover, his shirt crusted with vomit and his neck spotty with love bites. He took a pull from the flask he kept in his boot, grimacing at the bite of the cheap swill going down. He offered it to the Kadari, who stared at him with contempt.
"Oh, piss off, your majesty," grumbled the goatherd.
"Hold!" Pharos tugged on the reins as the grey cloak swaggered over to the Kadari side of the wagon. The road sloped down through the gates just ahead, and then the stomach-churning plunge to the lowlands.
"You boys watch the drop," Pharos blinked.
"That was today."
He vaguely remembered hearing something at the dram house about some cutthroat getting hanged for killing a lordling, or some such. He didn't much care for politics. As far as Pharos was concerned, they'd all be better off if Cirrus scooped up the keep and the sanctuary in either hand and hurled both into the sea. The Greycloak nodded.
"Heard he sprayed crimson out the 12 paces.
Pharos raised an eyebrow.
"At a hanging?"
The guard shrugged.
"That's what I heard."
He nodded to the canvas covering the back of the wagon.
"What are you moving?"
"Goats."
From under the canvas, there came a muffled but distinctly human sneeze.
"Goats,"
repeated the keeper. The young Kadari's hand slipped to the knife on his belt. Pharos didn't miss a beat.
"Sure, big ones, from the pale. Full grown, they'll be the size of horses."
He held up a little scroll.
"It's all on the manifest."
He took care to stomp on the Kadari's foot as he passed the scroll to the Greycloak and the 3-crown purse tucked between his thumb and the parchment. The guard unrolled the manifest and frowned at it. Pharos watched him closely. His eyes didn't move across the page. The stupid git probably couldn't read. After a suitably long beat scrutinizing the squiggles, he passed it back, less the gold.
"You lads ride safe now."
Pharos thanked him and flicked the reins.
"Name survive."
He elbowed the Kadari's hand away from his knife as the walls of the cliff rose on either side of them.
"What were you gonna do with that? Got him?"
There were 3 keepers above them on either side, crossbows at the ready.
"There's half the bleeding garrison watching."
The Kadari stared at him with those strange, no-color eyes.
"Nice front, sand pig."
Pharos growled, breaking his gaze. He shot a look over his shoulder at the canvas covering the back.
"And if one of yous makes another bloody sound before we get there, I'll flay the hide off of you."
The goats, big ones from the pale, the size of horses, didn't reply. He hadn't been worried about the Greycloak. The gate guards were notoriously corrupt, and 3 crowns was a season's wages for a typical keeper. If the guard ever proved more principled than they usually did, Pharos had a second letter, this one written on fine, fancy parchment stamped with a white wax seal. Master White had instructed him to give it to the highest-ranking keeper he could find if things ever went slantways. He didn't know what the letter said, for his bribe had never been refused. He waited until they were around the bend, safely out of sight from the guards.
"You Kadaris,"
he grunted as they juddered down the ramp.
"You never found a problem you couldn't stick your knife in. Maybe if you'd spent a little less time gutting each other, your sandy shit-heap would still be a free state."
"Keep talking, small man," the Kadari murmured.
A smile broke across the goatherd's cheeks, and he looked over in surprise.
"He speaks!"
The The lad couldn't have been long past 20, his olive skin smooth and unlined, a black turban coiled around his brow, mercenary leathers flashing with all manner of knives and those strange almond-shaped no-color eyes that made Pharos flinch. No beard. That was surprising. Pharos had never met a Kadari without at least a scraggle of dark beard. The caravaneers who ran their carts south past the Tandor swore up and down that even their women had beards as dark as midnight and smooth as silk.
"And here I thought I was just nattering to myself," Pharos chirped. "Glad to know there's at least one of you that speaks a civil tongue."
He nudged the lad with his elbow. It was like prodding a tree trunk.
"Maybe there's hope for your sheep after all."
The Kadari didn't say anything. He kept his eyes trained on the narrow trail skirted by the cliff face on one side and the empty on the other. Pharos noticed that his hand was still hovering close to the knife on his hip. The chuckle died in his throat.
"You're no fun," the goatherd grumbled. "I'll tell you what, lad. We get through this all without drawing steel, and I'll buy you an ale once we're back cityside. How's that sound?"
"Nothing." Pharos scowled and spat over the brink. They rode on in stormy silence after that. If Pharos looked over, he might have seen the glimmer of a smirk twitching at the corner of the young Kadari's lip. As it was, all he saw out of the corner of his eye was his hand hovering at his hip, all the way down to the hard pan. The sun hung low and bloody in the west when they saw them. It was still overcast, but daylight shone through the gap between the gray canopy and the dark fringe of mountains, and it set the sky on fire. He saw the wagons at first, one covered, one open. From a distance, they looked like the rocky outcroppings that dotted the scrubby hinter. The oxen yoked to the two carts looked ready to drop. Pharos heard the murmur of conversation while they were still a long way off. They'd cut south off the road a while back. And without the river, the sheer silence of the hinter was thick, almost oppressive. Then the figures, silhouetted against the burning sky like the slender cactuses hailing him with upraised arms. He counted 8. It was usually 5. He raised a hand in greeting. His heart hammered in his chest. His empty flask skittered around his ankles as he tugged on the reins.
"Easy now,"
he said under his breath, hoping the desert stillness wouldn't carry his words to the approaching brigands.
"No sudden moves. Let's get home in one piece."
Without waiting for a reply, he stood up with both hands raised high and dismounted. His boot heels crunched into the crust. 2 of the figures hurried forward, and Pharos made a show of drawing his stiletto from his hip and letting it drop point first into the hard pan. He tapped his foot impatiently as they patted him down.
"You'd think by now you'd know to trust me,"
he said to no one in particular.
"Mind the cargo,"
he grunted as one of them slapped his hand between his legs and gave his eggs a squeeze.
"Trust is how a man ends up dead,"
rasped a voice from the covered wagon. The cart shook on its axles as he climbed off the back of it. He was naked to the waist, with long scars that ran the length of his massive frame. His head nearly scraped the top of the wagon. His eyes were beetle black and loveless, and his thicket of beard was dyed a brilliant blue.
"You're late,"
the outlaw rumbled.
"Couldn't be helped,"
Pharos muttered, willing himself to maintain the giant's gaze. The nation were like jackals. They struck when they smelled fear.
"Roran, how are you, you big ugly shit? Does your wife dye your bits the same color as your beard?"
"Bend over and I'll show you."
He nodded to the Kadari, still sitting high on the wagon.
"Who's that?"
"New lad."
Bluebeard brushed past him and nearly knocked him flat.
"He don't talk much,"
Pharos warned. It was all he needed for the big brigand to decide he didn't like the tight-lipped Kadari. He'd seen him gut a man over less. Bluebeard ignored him.
"Alacha te il Kadarahal,"
he called up to the wagon, raising a hand in greeting. The goatherd's jaw sagged. The Kadari cocked his head.
"Zalim Nashazoma."
Whatever he was saying, he sounded incredulous. The giant hesitated.
"Kafa."
Out of the corner of his eye, Pharos saw one of the outlaws who'd patted him down lean over to his fellow.
"Bloody show off."
The Kadari laughed and stood up. Even standing in the cart, he was only a head taller than Bluebeard.
"Kafa."
He unslung his belt and dropped them onto the hard pan, then threw down two knives he kept up his sleeves and two more in his boots. He leapt down from the wagon and held out his arms for them to pat him down.
"Well, Pharos,"
Bluebeard said without turning. He'd loosened up a little after his exchange with the Kadari, although he still wore his stony scowl. Pharos didn't think he'd ever seen him without it.
"Let's have a look at your goats, then."
The wagoner jerked a thumb to his companion to meet him at the back of the cart.
"What did you say to him?"
He was still smiling as he untied the corner of his canvas.
"I asked him if he speak Kadari."
"Well, obviously he speaks. What did he say?"
He thought about it.
"He say, small child."
Pharos let it drop after that. He swept back the canvas with a practiced flick of his arm. The smell buffeted them like a fist, vomit and unwashed bodies. And he saw with some satisfaction as several of the brigands recoiled, wrinkling their noses. The cage was squat and square, with black iron bars that were spaced just wide enough for a thin man to slip his arm through. Pharos was always sure to explain to the goats before they left that anyone who tried it would get the arm back broken in three places. The meat sat with their heads bowed and legs crossed, four to a side. Each man had a dirty burlap sack fitted over his head, an innovation that had come too late to save the goatherd's fingers. They'd been a good bunch, relatively speaking. Pharos always made sure to cow them into compliance with a combination of vivid threats and watery grog laced with sweet milk before he put them into the cage. A few heads turned as he unslung his keys and opened the door. The rusty squeal grated on his frayed nerves.
"All right, boys. Up on out,"
he said, grabbing the nearest one by his filthy wrist and half helping, half dragging him off the back of the wagon. They could see through the burlap just enough not to trip over themselves climbing down. As each one spilled onto the hardpan, the long chain that linked all of their wrist irons pulled the next one down after him. There were eight, as always. Besides the burlap, each man was wearing whatever they'd arrested him in. A few had shirts, although these were holey and rotting, and the rest were bare-chested. They all shivered as the sun sagged toward the horizon.
"They don't look like much,"
one of the brigands muttered to his mate.
"Neither do you, shitwit,"
Pharos snapped. He didn't raise his voice. On the hinter, he didn't need to.
"They'll swing a pick as well as any."
"There's only eight,"
Bluebeard rumbled. Pharos's stomach clenched. He'd been hoping that Master White's other driver had come and gone by now. He looked up into the big man's granite scowl.
"It's always eight."
"No. Your man promised me 12. I brought extra men. And stones."
The goatherd threw up his hands.
"Listen, if he arranged for more, that's between yous. My deal is for 8 men at 5 rocks a head, same as ever."
Bluebeard glared down at him, his teeth bared. Pharos barely came up to his chest. He fought not to flinch under the weight of the big man's gaze. He was very aware of the huge, chipped cleaver dangling from Bluebeard's hip. A long moment passed. It was the brigand who looked away first.
"Let's have a look, then."
He chose one of the goats and pulled off the burlap. The man, who'd been stooped and shivering before, squawked and shrank away from Bluebeard the instant he could see. He pulled away from the brigand as far as he could before the long chain went taut. Bluebeard followed him. The prisoner's hair was dark and ragged. It hung in lank strands that framed a sallow, angular face pitted with pockmarks and open sores. His eye, only one, for the other was a mass of puckered scar tissue, was red and sunken, and it widened as the giant grabbed him by his face, squeezing his cheeks to force open his mouth.
"What'd they get you for?"
the brigand muttered, peeling back the man's lips to get a look at his inflamed gums. The prisoner didn't answer.
"Pharos,
why were you arrested?"
The man's voice was small and quavering, muffled by the big man's fingers in his mouth.
"Thieving."
Then, as Bluebeard withdrew, he added with downcast eyes,
"Rape."
The brigand was finished with him. He bobbed his head to the goatherd before turning to another prisoner and sweeping off his burlap to repeat his examination. Pharos took charge.
"Suppose you miserable bloody s*** are wondering why you're here. By rights, every one of you deserves a long walk to a short drop."
He swaggered in front of them, the speech he'd honed over countless halls coming as easy as breathing.
So far as the Dominion is concerned, every one of yous has been judged unfit to ever see the outside of a cell again. But fortune favours children, drunks and fools, don't she? So, you lot are being given a second chance to do a bit of good with your lives, maybe for the first time. These men are with the Free Nation.
He saw a shudder run down the line of prisoners.
I'm sure you've heard of him. If not, you'll be plenty familiar soon enough. You'll be taken south and put to work. If you fancy running, know that these men hold all the water for 100 leagues. So, there's quicker ways to kill yourself.
Slaves.
Every sack-covered head turned to the one who'd spoken.
They're gonna make us slaves.
They're gonna make you useful,
Pharos replied, inspecting his fingernails. And I'm told, if you work hard and keep your heads down and survive the desert, you just might live to rape and thieve again.
The king in the south rewards those who serve him well.
The brigands all clapped a closed fist against their chest at the mention of their desert king.
Some bloody freedom,
spat the one who'd spoken. He didn't notice Bluebeard padding silently up to him like an approaching storm.
Sleeping in the bloody desert, gutting each other over a mouthful of water, until the day Dominion sweeps down with 10,000 men and puts every last one of you whore sons to the...
His speech was punctuated by a low moan as Bluebeard swept the cleaver off his belt and disemboweled him in one smooth stroke. The wet plop of his entrails on the hard pan made Ferus's stomach churn.
Does anyone else care to talk politics?
The goatherd asked. No one did. Bluebeard crouched down beside the dying man and picked up his burlap sack. He wiped his knife clean and stowed it on his belt.
I'm feeling generous,
he said, turning to the goatherd.
I'll give you 20 rocks for the lot.
That's not the deal, Pharaoh sighed. The deal is 40 for 8.
No, my deal was 50 for 12. You've brought me 7.
If you cut up the cargo once they get here, that isn't my...
Bluebeard held up a hand to silence him. It was crimson to the wrist.
8 still isn't 12. You're lucky I'll give you terms at all.
Then Bluebeard laughed, a hearty boom that rolled like thunder across the hardpan.
You've got ice in your eggs, old man. 40.
He held out his red hand, and the goatherd shook it. He nodded to one of the other outlaws.
Get the rocks.
Pharos wiped his hand on his breeches and reached for his keys.
Wait.
They all looked. The Kadari had taken a step toward Bluebeard, his hands upraised. Pharos's heart sank, and he shot the Kadari a warning look.
The rest is coming,
his companion said in his guttural accent.
Shut up and get in the wagon,
the goatherd hissed, his boots sticking in the bloody clay as he unlocked the chain from the cage bars. He met Bluebeard's gaze and grimaced.
He's new. He don't know what he's talking about.
The outlaw who'd been sent to dig through the back of the wagon for the stones was walking back, hefting a sack.
40. That's a fine deal.
The rest is coming,
the Kadari insisted.
Enite ilim nachetumbaz.
Pharaoh saw a look of rare uncertainty pass across the big man's face.
Sounds like he knows more about this than you do,
he murmured. He took a step toward the Kadari.
You're sure the others are coming?
The boy nodded.
Let's just have the trade and be done with it.
Pharaoh could hear the strain in his own voice.
When the others come, you can give them the other 10 stones.
Why are you so eager to leave?
The cliff gates are already closed. I don't want to be waiting until bleeding midnight only for no one to show up.
The rest is coming,
the Kadari repeated.
I am sure.
The big brigand folded his arms across his barreled chest.
Then we'll wait,
he decided. Pharos glared with loathing at his companion, whose expression was as flat as ever. If they got out of this in one piece, he had half a mind to pitch the bloody sand pig off the stone bridge.
You know how clumsy those Kadari are,
he imagined himself telling Master White about the mishap. Bluebeard clapped a hand on his shoulder and dashed his thoughts to pieces. His dark eyes flashed like embers in the light.
This better be worth my time, Pharos,
he warned.
Umbaz,
the Kadari nodded. Pharos gnawed on the corner of his lip, trying to look more confident than he felt. The desert silence was thick and impenetrable. All he heard over it was a wet, slopping sound as the dying man tried to scoop his own guts back into his belly.
Thank you guys so much for listening. It genuinely is a privilege to be able to share this whole story with you. If you're catching this on YouTube, you can do me a favor by hitting subscribe and leaving a like or a comment on the video. Or if you're listening to this on Spotify, you can leave a 5-star review or share it with a friend. All right, that is enough out of me. I'm gonna go drink some water and I will catch you all for the next episode next week.